Okay, so welcome everybody. I'm really happy to be here with you today. For those of you that could make it for this special extra call, I decided to add this call to our schedule for two reasons. Well, maybe three. One is just because I had the time and I'm happy to connect and offer the extra support. But another reason is because there were a couple of pieces that I wanted to just add to our module. We've been looking, especially the last call, at strategizing. And so I wanted to just go through a couple of more strategizing pieces that I think you'll all find really, really helpful for yourselves, as well as when you strategize with your clients. So we'll spend a little bit of time doing that. And then from there, the other reason is I know that so many of you really receive so much value from our Q&A calls and having some extra Q&A time. And so I thought we were due for a little bit of Q&A time. I wanted to open up the space for any questions that you have around whatever we're learning, coaching skills, case studies with clients, and business pieces or inner pieces as well. So hopefully we'll have a nice amount of time for that. My plan is for this to be a 60-minute call. So let's dive in. In our last session, we really started to look at strategizing and how strategizing goes hand in hand with visioning, as well as how it goes hand in hand with the energetics of new things. And we looked a bit at the elements of a good strategy, right? We looked together, we went through the need for a clear goal, having a due date for the goal, having a guiding feeling or belief, or clarifying the deep why for the goal is really good for strategy as well. We spoke about baby steps. We spoke about markers for celebration, all of that. So those are the different elements. A good strategy doesn't need every single one of those pieces, but as we looked at last time, those pieces can really help. All that being said, there are a couple of other just kind of little pieces that I wanted you to be thinking about as a practitioner when you're strategizing with your clients. Oh, we also really looked at like consulting and coaching when strategizing, right? And the importance to not just, it's interesting, I just had a call with a client right before this call and she's like, "Joanna, just give me the strategy." Looking at a launch, she's like, "Tell me what date to start and what we how we should and all the things." And she's a client I've been working with for a little while, and I just started laughing, and then she started laughing at herself. She knew. I said, I can't give you the strategy, right? I am here and I will offer my expertise, but we're going to really, you're going to create your strategy. That's how it's going to be most effective and most aligned for you." So, a couple of now, no matter what you're working on with a client, obviously you're going to ask different questions to help them create their strategy. If you're working with them in corporate, a new team initiative, the questions are going to look different than if you're working on a health piece or a relationship piece or a business piece, right? So, you'll use all of your questioning skills, but I want to kind of give you some overarching types of questions to think about when you're co-creating strategy with clients. And some of this may come with consulting, so, along with some consulting pieces that you're giving, or separate from consulting pieces that you're giving. But here are just a couple of different questions to be thinking about. So, number one, what are you willing to do in order to achieve this? What are you willing to do in order to achieve this? that can generate some great ideas. Or if you've just consulted and like shared some different options, that can really support the client to have their agency in terms of, you know, what is it that they want to do? Another question, easy question, is what would be a great way to get there, right? The there being their vision, their goal, right? What would be a great way to get there? What's the fastest way to get there? That might be appropriate in some situations. What's the fastest way? Or what's the easiest way? What would feel easiest for you? Or what would feel most exciting for you? So those are some, you know, and you can adapt them to whatever you're working on with clients. But those are some kind of overarching questions to think about. Now, I wanted for us to look at two things more specifically. The first is blueprinting. We're going to talk about blueprinting now, and then we're going to talk about blueprinting again towards the end of the program when we look at time and how to support our clients with time, because blueprinting is very much about strategy and getting things done, and it's also about how we use our time. So I started to explain a little bit on our last call what blueprinting is, and I want to get a little bit more into it. So, but first I want to explain the why behind blueprinting. The reason why I often suggest that clients blueprint out their project is because a blueprint breaks things down into very small baby steps. And not for everybody, but for many human beings, when we've got a big project that we, or vision that we want to achieve, without small baby steps, it can feel very overwhelming. And it can almost feel undoable, and we might put it off or kind of get lost not knowing how to start or what to do. A blueprint supports a client to have a structure, supports a client to have a matrix for following up and getting things done. It can often take the overwhelm out of things because there's a step one and a step two and a step three and so on and so forth. It also supports a client to create a strategy in a pace that works for them. And we're going to talk about pacing after we talk about blueprinting, the two go together, but that's another important point. A blueprint supports a client or supports you to create a strategy that, that encased in it has a pace that works for them. I am certain that I would not get as much done as I do in my business if I didn't blueprint. I am certain of it. Now, that being said, always coach the what based on the who. There are going to be some clients that a blueprint is not good for them. They're more like, I don't know, sometimes more, how do I want to describe it? Not creative, but like, there's some people that thrive in chaos. Put it that way. If your client is the kind of person that thrives in chaos, then a blueprint is going to feel restrictive for them. But that being said, there's not just one way to blueprint. I'm going to lay out a way, and then you can always adapt for each client to make it as tight or loose as what's going to work for them. What I'm going to describe to you right now is the tightest type of blueprint, which is the kind that I use, because as you all know by now, I am a Virgo and I love lists, and I just, organization makes me feel peaceful. So yeah, I'm seeing some people nodding their heads and some people being like, no, too, right? So that's why I'm saying use law of adaptation. Always coach the what based on the who, but I'm going to give you the tightest. Like, this is my process. If this feels insane to you, like, you're not alone. There are some people that think this is insane, and then it is not right for you, and it is not right for all clients. But I'm just going to show you like how far you can go with it. So what I do in my business for myself is the following. I usually have a more looser plan for the year. Sometimes, and I mentioned, you know, at the beginning of our visioning call, sometimes it's even less than a year. Like, I know what's happening maybe in the next 6 months, always subject to change, by the way, you know, because business is living, growing, whatever. But, you know, I kind of know where I'm going, essentially, the overarching. And then what I do is at the beginning of every month, and for me, I do it paper and pen, as opposed to on the computer, but because that's what works for me. I like crossing things out too. One of the things that I love, I take a blank piece of paper and the first top section, I write down goals for June, right? Like, let's say June is about to happen, June 2021, goals for June 2021. And I don't write 100 goals there. Usually it's 3, 4, 5 goals that are not part of like the everyday things that are already working and in place in my business, but like this is on top of what I know is already gonna get done. This is what I want to have take place. And so it might be fill X program or have an amazing, I also like to use adjectives in the goals, right? Have an amazing preview call for Sacred Depths. You know, we're about to do another Art of Client Transformation, you know, so I have on there like, put on an amazing Art of Client Transformation that converts at least 5 people into Sacred Depths, right? Whatever it is. So, you know, and I'll tell you, sometimes I don't get to things like the last couple of months, I actually stopped putting it on my list is like, you know, up level my Instagram presence, right? I just resistance, whatever it is, but like make Instagram amazing, right? So, you know, I'll put not a lot, right? But a couple of goals that really support the bigger vision of where I'm going at the top. Sometimes one of the goals is space and peace, you know, like with 3 exclamation points. And I know I'm not going to have more than 2 or 3 goals for that month, right? So that's the top part of the paper. I just get clear on the goals for the month. And then what I do is for each of those goals, I break them down into 30 to 60 minute tasks, 30 to 60 minute tasks. No more, for me personally, no more than 60 minutes. I have some clients that can do no more than a 30 minute task, right? Or a 45 minute task. So that's something you wanna like negotiate with a client and explore. I have 30 to 60 minute tasks. So for example, if I have, let's say, a preview presentation for a program, some of the subtasks that are going to go in there are get clear on the messaging for that, you know, the top results that are going to come out of that preview presentation. I'm going to have not one, but 3 or 4 sittings at least of write the script for that preview presentation. Get really, you know, maybe the first sitting is get clear on the outline for that presentation. And then it's draft 1, draft 2, draft 3. I'll usually have a separate line for write the call to action for that presentation. And I'll usually give myself 2 sittings for that. You know, any little piece, right? I don't write my marketing like opt-in pages anymore or anything like that. but I review them, you know, if my team writes them, right? So I will just list out all of the little 30 to 60 minute pieces. So I do that for all the goals for the month. And if I know that I have a particularly busy month, I will also add to that list things that I know are gonna like happen anyway, but I just need a time for them. So prep curriculum for Sacred Depths on strategizing, right? Now I've already written all the curriculum for this program. I've done it many times, but I always like to take a little time to prep each cycle, up-level it, whatever it is. So I might even put in those small line items if it feels important, because I know my time that month is tight and I need a place for everything. So I do that. I'm trying to see if I can show you guys a visual. I just threw away all my old ones. Yeah. So anyway, I'll write out all of the sub things. And then from there, I assign each one of those things a date in the next 4 weeks in the month of June that I will do it on. If I have a day that's full of teaching, I'm not going to assign like myself writing on one of those days, because that's setting myself up for failure, right? So, and sometimes I'll have 2, 3, 4 of those things on the same day. I have an open day, whatever it is. I know that like when I'm writing a script, for example, I need at least a day or two in between sittings to let things, you know, kind of sit and marinate between outlines for like programming outlines. I even need a little more time, right? So I assign a date to everything. Every now and again, I see I can't fit all the things in, right? Like the days run out. There's not enough days in the month, right? And so then I have to make a decision. Am I going to ask John if I can work on a weekend day or two and get it done? Or is this not realistic for the month, right? Or is there something that is maybe not essential that I can pull out? Or if you have a team, can I delegate some more of this, right? But that's the other reason why I love this process, is because it lets you know beforehand what you have time for. So I do all of that at the beginning of the month. Now, this is where I get a little crazy. That is a working document for me that I have. At the beginning of every week, I take a smaller piece of paper and I go down that blueprint for the month, and any of those action items that happen in that week, I write it down on the piece of paper. And by the way, sometimes I have to add action steps for the blueprint, you know, as things happen throughout the month, right? So then I look at the beginning of the week, I make my list for the week based on the work I did at the beginning of the month, and I write the dates down again. And then I write a little bit, usually like I do that. And then at the beginning of each day, I look and say, okay, what am I doing today? And I assign it a time. 1 to 2 p.m., 3:30 to 4 p.m. So that it's like it's a living, breathing thing that I'm always working with. On any given week, I'm not worried about what's happening next month or even the tasks for next week or the week after. I'm only concerned with what needs to happen that week, what needs to happen that day on each given day. And then I get to cross a lot of things off of a lot of lists, which is very satisfying. All right, let me pause here. Questions on blueprinting? What are you seeing for yourself? How are you seeing this might be helpful for you or your clients? Of course, thinking about law of adaptation with all of this. What wants to be shared about this? Anika's saying in the chat, this is exactly what you need. Good. Sonia Singh, I'm curious about how to, you've got your hand raised. Let me just, Sonia.
Oh, maybe that was the other Sonia in the chat, actually.
Oh, you're right. Okay, I'll come back to you. Sonia F is saying, I'm curious about how to discern winter from just making an excuse. Sonia, do you want to come on for that? Sonia.
Hi, sorry. Hi. Yeah, I'm just curious. I'm not sure how to tell more for myself, and then by extension, definitely not how to tell for somebody else. How to discern. Yeah.
So from experience with yourself, even if you don't know completely, if you just kind of like a be like a little bit of a detective, how do you know the difference between it's just not right versus hiding?
Not right versus hiding, I think.
Or winter from hiding, the way you put it in the chat.
I don't know. I mean, the contraction in the body could come up for both if hiding is fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I have no idea. I'm not sure. It's a bit muddy in my head, maybe because I'm hiding.
Okay. So is the quality of the contraction different?
I would have to pay attention to that as it happens.
So that would be one piece of homework, if you're willing to notice, you get into the more subtle details of your body and the contraction. And then the other piece I'd add to that is start to pay attention to what you're telling yourself in those moments.
Oh boy, okay. That'll be fun.
Yeah, why is that making you chuckle?
Well, it's a constant project, right? Paying attention to what the thoughts are doing. It's you know, that's something that must never stop, and that's easy, that I easy forget. And
Yeah, I know, it's like the simple things sometimes that we have to come back to, right? Yeah, so start paying attention to both those pieces, and let's see if you can, you might want to write it down, like track it or not, but see if, my sense is you'll start to see a difference. If not, come back with the, you know, next time and we'll look deeper. How does that feel?
Sounds great. It's going to be an interesting experiment. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, Sonia H.
I was just wondering, are you working with rhythms or any cyclical understanding in your planning? Because I feel like I also have a similar planning as you described, but then some days of the month, I just feel my energy so low and I can't really keep up with what I plan to do. So is there any way in which you apply this?
Not so much in terms of monthly, you know, like where my cycle is or the moon, but I do know that a lot that does work for a lot of people to plan around your cycle so that it, you know, you know, if you know that you're regular and you know that, you know, right before is not a great time, you know, whatever it is, absolutely, when you do the blueprint, take that into consideration. My equivalent of that throughout the month is, I think, more around like what's happening with my kids, right? Like where, like, I'm looking at their schedule and then planning around where I know my energy is going to be needed. But for sure, if you know that you have days that are more energetic and less based on the month, do it. Yeah. And we're also going to look at a different kind of pacing in a moment too, that I think will inform that question as well. Naomi.
Thank you so much for going through this. I was grateful to see that it's so much in my own process. And yet I was wondering, is this something you actually take clients through? Like you, in a coaching session, you will plan out the minute by minute schedule, or it's just something you offer to guide them?
Depends on the client. So some clients, I'll usually at some point in my work with a client describe the process. And some of them are like, this is awesome, I'm running with it, doing it on my own. Can I just show you what I came up with? And then there are other clients where you can tell that they're like, they freeze. And so for that client, it's worth it to take the time to do it together, at least the first time. Usually if you do it once or twice together, that's all they need. So it really just depends on the person.
Thank you. And as a coach, do any accountability work with them around certain goals, or it's just what they bring into a session? You hold space and discuss that. What's the next step around the blueprint?
Yeah, I'll answer briefly now because we'll do a full call on accountability. The short answer is, again, always coach the what based on the who. So some clients in certain periods too, you know, because different people are different in terms of like, what's the goal and how scary is it or what do they have going on, right? But there's certain clients that just go and run with it and we just check in sessions. There are other clients for certain periods where I know it's important to hold a tighter container for them and we'll check in between sessions or schedule times to just talk briefly or, just really depends on the person and what they need. Some people I'll have like a Monday, Friday email check-in. What I'll say for now is you want to design the accountability with the client. Of course, you don't want to overgive yourself, like what feels right, but also what's going to work for them without you taking over responsibility for them. So that you want the process to also teach them how to become more accountable to themselves. And we'll look at all the different pieces around that later on. Rose.
Yes. I find as I listen to you talk about this, I guess I feel maybe a little envy that you have that ability to do that much detail. And I wonder, in order for me to coach any clients on that, I would personally have to, you know, walk through that process myself. And I could see that some form of that could be extremely useful in our kind of businesses. And so what do you suggest for like the creative aspect of this, where I always say that you can't say exactly how long things will take, or if resistance gets involved, or there are certain tasks that I know I can do in a very linear way. But when it comes to creation, or I just can come up against so many roadblocks. And so,
yeah, so that's a great, like, that's awesome. Right. And so when you're supporting a client to create, you know, their blueprint and their schedule, you want to take that into consideration, right? So that's why, for example, I was saying when I create curriculum for a program, I never do it in one sitting. I never do it 3 days in a row. I give myself, especially like the first time for a program, I give myself 5-6 sittings. And half of the time I'm like laying on the couch, staring at the ceiling.
All right.
I know that that's my process. So part of it is really when you strategize with a client, and I'm so glad you want to ask them these questions, right? And you're not always going to get it right necessarily at the outset. Sometimes it needs to happen. And then you learn more about the process. They learn more about their process. But that's part of the ways that we support our clients, is to help them become more and more aware of their processes, right? And sometimes we can support them to streamline, but sometimes we just have to support them in normalizing their creative process.
Okay, that's really helpful.
Yeah, and then with resistance, it's like if there's certain things that you know that you're resistant to, like for me, video. I hate doing video. So I know that I'm going to give myself maybe, if I really usually only need one, right? You do a video once, I'm going to give myself two times to do it. You know, so you could kind of know where the hot buttons are too, and then plan for that.
Okay, so it's really, and so in order to do that, you need to get clear on your own so that, yeah, so there's the.
Right, you want to try to go through it on your own. And then remember last week, I was also sharing about contingency time, which is important too.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's better to at least have some of that versus not having it at all, having any boundaries. So I can certainly see that. I like that. All right, thanks.
Yeah, I'm excited for you to play with it. I feel like there's
me too.
Some good stuff there. Okay, great. There's one other piece that, oh, Dagmar, did you have a question? Yeah, go ahead.
So it's a little bit connected to what just you were speaking with Rose about. And I have like this massive resistance for content creation. And the foundation of me is like—
Resistance to what? I didn't hear.
To content creation.
Oh, mm-hmm.
For my clients. So I am extremely creative and, you know, I do my practices or whatever, and like the most genius ideas are coming through. But literally the second I get in front of the laptop and there's like a specific process to follow and specific things that have to be delivered, I go in resistance. I go in a freeze mode. I want to run away. And it takes me something that can take me like 20 minutes. It's taking me hours, and it's very painful process. So I don't know if you can speak to this a little bit.
Yeah. You're not alone in it. I think there's an inner piece and a practical piece.
Mm-hmm.
So the inner piece, you know, maybe we can swing back and look a little bit, because I want to get through just another piece of curriculum, but the inner piece would be to look at what are the fears there, right? What is the resistance? And make friends a little bit with some of the fears, you know, energetically. And then the practical piece is, there may be some things about the actual process that you could be doing differently. So for example, I mean, you didn't share every little piece, but from all these great, clearly you said like these great ideas come through. Mine usually come in the shower or walking around the block, right? Whatever it is. So what happens in between that and the computer, right? If getting in front of the computer and getting it organized creates a freeze, then is there a middle step there where you just have a white piece of paper and you scribble all of the ideas on the paper and then you start to order them in the order that they would make so much sense, or make some more notes shooting off of them. And then you just go and type that all out indiscriminately onto the computer. And then maybe you organize, you move things around from there, because it sounds like part of what's happening from what you described is almost like the blank page syndrome in a way. I share, for those of you that have been in Curriculum Lab, I always share this story and I'll share it now. When I was in college, I took a drawing class, like a drawing 101 class. And the very first day we had to bring we had to buy for the class, these big white drawing pads, big. And the very first day of the class, I would never forget, the name of the professor was Professor Ball. He, you know, we get in there, the very first thing we do is he says, rip a piece of paper out of the pad. Okay, rip a piece of paper out of the pad. And then he says, put the piece of paper on the floor and stamp all over it. Get it dirty. Stamped all over it, got it dirty. And then he said, take it up and scrunch it into the smallest ball that you can. We scrunched it up. And then he said, flatten it out and we're gonna start drawing. And it was brilliant, really, because it was like, it wasn't perfect anymore. It wasn't blank and like this just vast open thing. It was like, we could do mistakes. There was the freedom to just get it out, do the drawing and start the work. So maybe if you shifted up the process a little bit and just allowed things to, as those ideas came, you know, like I said, get messy, do a brain dump, map, you know, whatever it is, and then transfer it and organize from there, or some variation of that. Is that helpful?
Yeah, definitely. Thanks a lot.
Great. Okay. All right. One other piece. I want to talk about rhythms, not like we do in sacred rhythms, which is the a little bit more what Sonia was speaking to, and seasonal rhythms and knowing wintering versus summering and all of that. But the best way, I don't know, however you want to call this, we'll call it natural rhythms. So what I mean by that is each human being, and this can change depending on life situation for each person too, but generally, each one of us has a natural internal rhythm that is really aligned for us. And when we can know what that natural rhythm is, and then create our blueprints and our strategies to accommodate that rhythm, things are much more in flow. So I'm going to name some of the most common rhythms that I have found as I've worked with human beings. So the first kind of rhythm is what I would call the consistent doer, the consistent doer. I'm kind of like this. This is the marathoner, right? When you run a marathon, you know, like I have X, I want to finish, you know, I forget how long a marathon is, whatever it is, 27 miles in 5 hours. So I need to do this many miles this hour, you know, like I'm going to divide it equally throughout the time, right? There's 10 modules to create for the curriculum. So I'm doing one module a day. Consistent doers. Another type of natural rhythm that's pretty common are sprinters. So first is marathoner, this one is sprinter. People that the way their natural rhythm works is they have a lot of energy. They can get a lot done in a day or 2 days or even in a week. And then they need a break and like almost to do nothing for a day or 3 days or whatever it is for them. And then they can sprint and then not do anything for a while. That's how their energy is, almost like how your energy runs in a way, I would say. And there are other people, I call them the tipping pointers, and their natural rhythm is that you're not going to see anything like them produce anything above the surface for a while. They need to marinate on things and nothing is happening. And it looks like nothing is happening, but they're like marinating and like they need a longer creative time or marinating time or getting their ideas together and solidified time. And then there's a tipping point and they can do all the outer things. You write the script, write the blah, 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 you know, whatever it is. And then another type, you know, and some of these have crossovers. I'm just giving you different examples. And there's much more than this, just different ways of thinking. People that I call deep thinkers and processors. This is similar to the marathoners, except they're just much slower, doesn't have to be a bad thing. So long as people know and accept and embrace and their rhythm and they see it as a superpower. So I have had a couple of clients over the years that are just, they're deep thinkers and process, something that takes most other people, you know, 2 hours, this person needs 2 weeks. And it's not because they're not good enough or there's a fear or anything like that. They think through all the layers and that's how they move forward. All right, so let's pause here. What are you hearing? Where are you, right? So either these four, or you can make up one for yourself. What's your natural rhythm? What's your natural rhythm? Dagmar, constant doer. You probably need some breaks in there. That's the thing with marathoners or constant doers, is like you have to, the beauty of the way the constant doer works the best is it's like in moderation, right? So that the rest is built in every day. Constant doer and sprinter. Well, so that we can get in trouble with the constant sprinting too, right? Remember, the sprint needs the bigger break afterwards. Deep thinker and processor. Yeah. How have you gotten into trouble by not being aware of your natural rhythm or by pretending it doesn't exist? How have you or how do you get into trouble by kind of betraying your natural rhythm? Yeah, Naomi was saying burnout, sprinting in the marathon. Yeah, a lot of burnout. Julia.
Yeah, I'd say for me, it's when I would take a break, I would forget that it's a break and then find myself in a funk. Mm-hmm. And then I would forget, and then I'd think, am I the same person? Like, weren't you the one who's out there who was doing this, who was, you know, alive, infectious, and now you can barely get off the couch? And then just go downhill from there. Yes.
So from what we've been looking at today, what do you sense might be helpful for that?
Well, you said here needs bigger break for the sprinters, and that really scares me. I think it's because I really attach action to my personality. If I'm not in motion or movement, and I can sit still, I can do that stuff, but like longer breaks to me signify problems.
Yeah.
It's like I'm asking for problems.
Right. So, okay. So this is actually really important, right? Because what if you embraced your natural rhythm as a sprinter? What if the longer break allowed for the sprint? Right. There's another way to look at this. And then you may need an outer piece here. How can the blueprint support you in this? Right. So you might know that your break, you have a 3-day break or whatever it is, and you give that to yourself in the blueprint when you're deciding each month what you're doing when, but then you know, like, and then on Monday, I'm back in motion, right? So can you use your blueprint to honor whatever your natural rhythm is, and then really have the two work together?
Yes. Yeah, I'm looking at the calendar right now and already making adjustments as you were speaking.
Good. I'm so glad. Yeah, let us know. Let us know how it goes. Maya.
Hi. I am a natural sprinter, or as my mom says, fireworks. And then after that, I crash and I get in trouble pretending that I'm a marathoner because I really would like to be. And I think culturally, from school to workplace, you expect it to be. So I have actually learned how to fake marathoning, which is very exhausting. And it also gets in a way of sort of fireworking in my best way.
Yes, which is your natural energy. Yeah. I'm so glad that you're really seeing this so clearly, right? It's like, you're working against your natural energy when you pretend to be a marathoner, if you're a sprinter or a fireworker. So honor, like embrace that natural rhythm. Try a month or two that way and let's see what's possible with moving with the natural energy.
Thank you.
Yeah. Anika's saying my problem I'm seeing is that I'm deep thinking and processing so much at the same time in all directions, and then paralysis happens. I get lost and can't find my way up. Yes. So Anika, is there a way, I want you to think about this, for you to use a version of the blueprint to support, to almost create some guardrails for you around this so that you allow for the deep thinking if that's part of your natural rhythm, but then you also know when this is the moment where I'm going to come out of the deep thinking and just take action, even if it's imperfect and even if it's not fully baked or integrated yet. That's something to think about. Catherine's having an aha moment. I think I'm a sprinter, but marathoned for about 17 years and I'm pooped. Yeah. I'm sorry you're pooped, but I'm happy that you're having that aha, right? So you can adjust that now, right? Just adjust. Yeah. Myth of perfection. Yes, Stephanie, that plays into this, right? Like, did you want to say something?
Well, it was kind of building off what Anika was sharing, like doing all that deep thinking to try to get it all figured out, all of the wording perfect, all the, you know, visioning perfect, that then that is paralyzing. So I appreciate the guardrail metaphor and giving some time and space to just let the ideas flow as imperfect as they may be. So
yeah, right. Because then there is a moment where you want to cross over, allow it to be, and know that it's okay, right? And it can be shifted and all the things. Good. Yeah. Kim is saying, I feel like I have different ways of being depending on the situation. And I get confused myself about what I need in any given moment. Kim, do you want to come on for a moment?
Sure. I think sometimes I process very quickly. I'm just moving right through things. And other times I really need to go internal and have space around it. And I get so frustrated that I they both are true. And I don't know how to reconcile that sometimes.
Yeah, I hear that. And it's so first of all, it's so good to know about yourself. So on the like logistical or practical piece, just with blueprinting, what I would say is plan for more space, like plan for deep processing, but then check in with yourself. And if something happens more quickly, readjust the dates for yourself, you know, whatever needs to, so that you're in process, you're aware of your process. It doesn't have to be something in any moment, but you can go with where your flow is.
And so one of the things that happens when I create additional space, I've never really done this, the blueprinting idea, so I will definitely, you know, explore that. But when I have my own version of creating, you know, okay, I'm going to give myself extra space, all I do is procrastinate, or I lose track, or I just lose interest, rather than, you know, being in a something where there's triggers or milestones that are important to move me along.
Well, that's yes, 100%, which is now we'll see once you try the blueprint, but that's exactly why I love the blueprint, because what oftentimes happens if we just give ourselves more space is like we show up at our computer at the beginning of the day and we're like, what do I do? You know, like, what am I working on today? What are the, how do I get started? You know, what's the thing? And then three snacks later and the New York Times crossword puzzle, whatever, you know, it's like, oh, it's the end of the day. Right. So with the blueprinting, the way that I described it, the chunking it down, right. So for you, for example, you may need to chunk it down even more. Right. So instead of write first draft of article today or in this sitting, it might be write first paragraph of article, or jot down the five pieces, the five points that I want to make in the article, right? That might just be step one of the blueprint for that. And then step two is write out the first point in 1 to 2 paragraphs. And that's it for that sitting. And right. So play with it and see if you can find something that works within that.
Is it, do you tend to think people are, okay, here's my real question. I want to be able to give myself permission to create different blueprints for different things.
Yeah.
So like a real speedy blueprint for one thing, but I don't peg myself in to any one kind of approach.
I love it. 100%. 100%. So I'm doing that within my blueprint. Like I said, for curriculum, I give myself a lot more space. For writing an article, I give myself a lot less space because I know I can just churn that out. 1, 2, 3. I am assessing each goal. And I love that you're asking this question because it's making me kind of think through it more for everybody. Like, and then what are your strengths, right? So like, or not even strengths, because I have a strength in curriculum, but my creative process in curriculum is different than how I can churn out words for an article or make a list for, right? So yes, absolutely tailor each piece to your natural rhythm. And maybe there's a natural rhythm for each task. Even right, so 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
Good question. Okay, we still have some time left. Not as much Q&A as I had. Well, we've been asking Q&A this whole time, but I just want to open the floor for more questions on what we've been talking about, or anything else that you wanted to bring to the table or get support on, Julia.
Yes, thank you. Okay, so say you have to fill a group program. This is where my head is. Please tell me your step-by-step, including the parts in between just everything.
It's just, okay, I'll tell you everything in the next 3 minutes on how to fill a program. I'll give you everybody some guidelines. And then if you have follow-up questions, you can post in the Facebook group. We can also do another, longer Q&A call, or if this is a topic everybody wants, we can do a special call just on this. So filling a group program or one-on-one practice, some things that are very similar, I always like to reverse engineer. So what I mean by that is, when is the start of the program, right? Like, when is the very first class of the very, first day of the program, right? So you want to understand that. And also what you want to understand is what is the promise of the program, right? Why would somebody sign up for this program? Why would they invest their time, money, and energy into this program, right? So getting clear, and there's more things to get clear on. I'm gonna talk very quickly right now on some things, right? So you wanna have clarity on all of that. Price point of the program, format, all the things. You don't wanna have the whole program planned out, but the big things, what are the topics it's gonna cover? You want that sense of all of that, because that's gonna help you reverse engineer with the marketing. So then from there, this all depends also, there's so many factors, like how many people would you like in the program? How many people are already in front of you? There's so many different pieces. So I'm just going to give like a general, but there's back to everything I've been teaching, coach the what based on the who, there's so much here, right? But generally speaking, you want one or two, what I call major marketing moments to fill a program, right? So let's take Sacred Depths, for example. I know for Sacred Depths, I'm going to have one or two, at least sometimes more, because I'm filling it with so many people, it just depends. But let's say one or two preview opportunities. And what I mean by major marketing moment or a preview opportunity is an opportunity, like I know one of my strengths, and I'm gonna say in general for anyone that is attracted to work with me, like all of you, one of your strengths probably is when someone is in a container with you, like when they're in a workshop with you or a talk with you, or you're holding an experience for them, they're gonna like fall in love with you and want more, right? Yes, you're nodding your head. So you wanna think about what are one or two public, where I can bring a lot of people in that are either free or low cost, that are related to the bigger program, where I can support those people, give them an incredibly valuable experience, a shift in perception, or the beginning of a transformation, some kind of breakthrough, and support them to see that they need the work of the program. Right. So again, to use Sacred Depths as an example, the Art of Client Transformation, many of you were there. That's a container where we look at some of the foundational pieces of what it takes to create transformation with clients. Right. And in that, I give a lot of value, you know, so much value, but I also agitate a little bit. I help people see where their gaps are. Right. And then I plug in, I'm consistently sharing how the Sacred Depths pieces can help them fill those gaps, right? So you want to kind of think about one or two of those, place them within 10 weeks. You always want to start marketing group program about 10 weeks before, if not more than that. You want to give yourself enough time because then you want to promote the event. You want to get people into the event, right? You want to prepare for it and then you want to follow up. You also want to do individual outreach. Anybody that you know that would be great for the event, reach out to them. I have a whole training on that, by the way. If you look in your bonus materials, I think it's called like how to fill your program, your retreats and your one-on-one or something like that, it's worth listening. I think it's a 2 or 3 session little training. I go into much detail on a lot more of these things. Individual outreach, inviting people into conversations with you, posting, you know, so all the strategies to support all of that. That was like a 5-minute just down and dirty, but does that give you stuff to think about?
Oh yeah, this is perfect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Catherine.
Thank you. I was just typing, I have to run soon. So my question is, how do you incorporate consulting within a coaching session? So for example, I do money coaching. So how do you combine that?
Yeah, so what are the, what are the specific things that you would be consulting on? Give us an example.
It might be how to plan like an annual money plan. Like, how do I afford to buy the house? Let's like break it down. So I take them through money steps or budgeting type things or aligning spending with values. I like to do kind of more the emotional piece with money. So how do I bring in that information and walk them through it while also, that involves some consulting.
For sure. You could absolutely take them through the process, but make sure you're asking questions throughout that support the client so that they know they have full agency in making each of the decisions that you're sharing about, and questions that help them tailor each decision even more to them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Awesome.
I love that. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Any other last questions before we wrap for today? Can take one more if anyone's got one. No? All right. Well, I'm sending you all a ton of love. Work with your blueprints. If you're already blueprinting, see if you want to take it to the next level. I want to hear how it goes and, you know, think of it as an experiment, right? I want to hear how the experiment goes and what comes up and where you need support with it as you move through it. Have a wonderful rest of your week. See you guys soon.